You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome back to Cool Games Inc., video game design podcast for Cool Games Inc. I'm Griffin McElroy.
I'm Nick Robinson.
We're our own thing, baby. We are our own independent satellite operation.
We are, and this is our first episode, our first live show.
Our first live, independent, just free from the fucking shackles of corporate America, coming to you live through Netscape Navigator.
Exclusively available through Netscape Navigator.
You had to fucking FTP our shit, and I hope you turned on... I hope you turned on the code blocker that kept the government out of these files. Nick Robinson, do you know it's a very special time for me and my my Austin, Texas family here in the Cap City.
I can imagine it's probably popping off because of South by Southwest.
Because of, well, you just call it South by or SoBo.
I thought a lot of people call it Sexow, right? SXSW.
A lot of people call it SSX Tricky. A lot of people call it SoBo.
A lot of people call it SSX just by itself. Some people call it Cypress Hill.
A lot of people just call it. And a lot of, there's a lot of, can I tell you stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, always.
Very disrupted. Down here, these, like, today, during this year's 2017's edition of the South by Southwest, the downtown is just disrupted. The fucking fault lines running underneath Austin have basically shattered the city in half.
Oh, it sounds like very geographically disrupted.
It's geographically disrupted, but I'm being speaking metaphorically. It's just that somebody brought some apps that just, like, were really good.
Oh, so that type of disruption.
So
y'all
the one
don't
that,
have y'all
you know
don't have
what,
like
you know the, which. Go ahead.
You guys don't have,
you know,
like,
which one that.
So I was just gonna say that you guys don't have, y'all don't have like Lyft down there.
Oh no, we don't have Lyft or Uber because we fucking disrupted those fucking idiots.
You sure did. You disrupted the disruptors. It's kind of the ultimate type of disruption. But
they killed the cabs. And what killed the cab? What killed the cabs? God. Wait, no. What killed the cabs? Uber did. What killed Uber? God did.
Interesting. The god of Austin. The god mayor of Austin.
Yeah. God, man kills god. Woman kills man. Woman dominates the world. Jurassic Park.
They took a rib out of a taxi and used it to make Uber. But then Uber ate from the tree of sin.
Mm-hmm.
And they got kicked out of the Garden of Austin.
And now we have Suber.
Now tell me about this. This sounds very disruptive. What is Suber?
Subaru is a dealership you go and you buy a nice Outback. And then you drive it. No queues, no long wait times. You just get in your Subaru and go. No app.
Subaru Uber. And it's like Uber, but for driving yourself.
And then Subaru is going to be like, we don't want to pay all your fees, Austin. We're leaving too unless you give us back our fees. And we're just like over here. I'm over here with my fucking Frisbee golf, just flipping you two birds, like, eat a cold one, fucking Subaru. We chase them the fuck out of town. And that opens an opportunity for me to launch my competing app, Sparrow.
Now tell me about Sparrow.
You go and you get a nasty small pizza.
Okay. At a good price?
No, God. Yeah, dude, you're just going to go and get a weird disc of bad cheese and stuff.
Was that the Frisbee you were talking about?
It was inspired by the Frisbee. I threw the Frisbee and like some God rays shone through it. And I was like,
Eureka.
I've seen it. Yeah.
Cool.
And then Uber comes back into town and drives straight into the fucking front glass window display of my Sparrow, killing me and six other people, and then they're back in charge. So
now that's disruption.
And it's very disrupted downtown.
Yeah.
You heard about all the cool apps that have come out of this one?
I'm about to. From you.
From me? Okay. There's the one. Do you know how sometimes you'll be on the phone, you'll be like on the subway or in a subway ordering your sandwich, but you just ordered it and you're sitting down and you're eating your sandwich and you're on your phone calling your friends?
Yes.
And your phone's... What?
This happens to me so many, like 3 or 4 times a week, I feel like.
Mm. And also, this is happening and the phone slides because it's made of a glossy alloy. And it slides from your fingers, and it lands right on your balls and genitals.
Yeah.
And it hurts really
bad. Face down, too.
Yeah.
I've actually taken... Here's a little life hack if this happens to you a lot. You can actually go into the Touch ID settings, and you put your balls and genitals in there as a thumbprint.
I don't want it active.
And that way it logs in every time I do that.
I don't want it to do that, because what if it lands on the floor, and I accidentally do a Fire Emblem turn with my toes?
That would be bad. You could end up FaceTiming.
The app. Who? FaceTiming who?
Yeah, it's just, you could end up FaceTiming your balls and your genitals to the friend you're on the phone with, and that's no good for anyone.
Stink. So this app I've got is a big children's balloon, and you just tie it.
App.
You tie it right on there as a sort of add-on bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on the phone at Subway, and first of all, I look cool. I have a big, cool balloon. This is a conversation starter.
It's a big balloon, you're saying?
It's a children's balloon, but it's big enough to have to phone.
Got it. It's got to be pretty big. That sounds a little bit disruptive, but I want you to keep going.
Yeah, I mean, it's bouncing against the ceiling of the Subway, and they've asked me to leave. And so I'm in there, and I'm calling my friends, and I let go of my phone. Oops, slip slide, and it fucking, like, have you seen Mission Impossible with Tom Cruise?
I have seen it, yeah.
You know the part where he goes, bam, bam, and he goes down on the rope, and he swings into the vault?
Mm-hmm. Just like that,
he steals all the money. With his cool rope, he Spider-Man's down from.
Yes, I do. And you're saying the balloon situation
does that,
reminds
dude.
You of that.
Yeah, the phone like drops like really fast, and it's coming down on a corner or an edge, so that if it did, and I'm wearing those shorts, and so if it had landed, that would have been sayonara.
Yeah, you'd
but,
be.
But it, you know what it did? Balloon catches it last second, and I fucking,
I
like, it floats
that.
Back up, and I just grab it and put it right back to my
Talk
ear.
Talk about,
I'm like,
it's kind of a hands-free situation.
And I'm like, sorry, Jameson, what were you saying? And, like, everybody looks at me, and they all applaud, and I get
Everyone
my money.
In the restaurant stands
yeah,
up
Yeah, and I get my money back for my Subway sandwich.
They're like, they actually are like, we're so sorry, sir. We didn't realize.
We didn't realize we had the next Mark Zuckerberg here with us. And they punch all the fucking buttons on my card. And I just know next time
give you one of those cookies also on the way out the door, or?
Dude, they already gave me one of those cookies when they saw my cool balloon. So, yeah.
Now let's. It sounds like there might be kind of a bit of a rift because some. It must.
You know
I think
the
they
app's
really.
Called?
They
you
really.
Know what
ate,
called?
What's the app called, Griffin?
Balloon.
Okay, I think it seems like there's maybe a rift, or at least I guess it seems like the Subway employees are really kind of eating crow, because it's what you told me at first was that when you walked in, the balloon was bumping up on the ceiling and they were asking you to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really only, it wasn't until they saw the purpose
of
the balloon.
Yeah, it's the manager asked me to leave. He's fucking lame, Mr. Jangle.
Yeah, who's the manager now, Mr. Jangle?
Mr. Shingles.
Mr. Shingles.
Asked me to leave because he was like, you can't have a balloon in here. And then I fucking pantsed
Joke's
him.
On you, you old.
Yeah, you old. So that's balloon. Just B-L-O-O-N.
Got it. Cool, I'll download that.
Yeah, you already did. It's I worked with Apple to just get it on
everyone's
phone.
That's got to be a sweet deal. Is it preloaded
now,
on there?
I'll tell you what I did for the software dev on this one. It's a short cycle. It's just a bookmark to Google Chrome, and it opens up an Amazon order of just one very big children's balloon.
Mm-hmm. It just adds it to your cart.
Yeah.
And you worked with Apple to preload Google Chrome on every iPhone.
Yeah, with Robbie Jobs.
I gotta imagine that Johnny Ive was not psyched about that.
He didn't have fuck to say about it because he didn't have fuck all to say. I had Robbie Jobs on the case.
Mm.
That was
is that Steve Jobs'
like little friend?
His little Steve Jobs' little friend. It sounds like it's been a really good year for you at South by Southwest.
Yeah, I mean, I've lost everything, but. You got to spend money to make it.
You got to spend money to. So this was sort of a it's you a building invested year. In the app in a big yeah. way.
It's a rebuilding year. And tomorrow, next year is probably going to be a rebuilding year too, because I have nothing. Should we do what we do?
Mm-hmm.
What did we do last? I feel like really good about what we did last time on our short fever episode.
Oh, man. I really was not.
You defo don't remember, huh?
Physically making memories. No, I was still saying stuff, but I was not like none of it was getting downloaded. So if you
yeah,
could,
you were eternal sunshining it like pretty fucking hard.
If you could remind
it was,
me.
Oh, it was Oops All Bailey's The Cash Cab.
Oh, game. I do. Okay. That does actually, that feels familiar.
I mean, I think that one actually didn't turn out super great because once, I mean, it was a good fine game, but like the player base was among the most toxic ever because it was just like, what's 2 plus 3? And someone would be like, 5? And he'd be like, nope, 8. Get the fuck out of my car.
Right. It like, was very troll friendly in a way.
Very
that we
troll friendly. Yeah.
Could have anticipated if both of us were like mentally at 100% for that episode.
I mean, I was, and I have no excuse. Let's do some shit.
Cool.
Should we start with the top one?
Yes.
Let's start with the top one. The top
from
one
Og Vortis.
Yeah. You want to read it?
Sure. It's a game where you organize and command the tiny team of people who live inside and operate a vending machine.
I like this very much. You know I'm into that fucking lemonade stand manager shit, but there's right. also sort of a physical element to this. How tiny are we talking here? Like borrowers? Secret role of Arrietty? Like, what are we talking about?
Oh, a little secret role of Arrietty vibe. So they're extremely small. We're to even receive a quarter from a customer is going to be like a three-man jobby.
Yeah, because you try to do that with one man and you get fucking Indiana Jones'd in the Temple of Doom.
You get chased down. Well, that could be the beginning of every level, is there's a chase sequence where
that was not, sorry, it was the other one. It was the other Indiana Jones movie. Sorry, I got to get ahead of the tweets. It was Temple of Time.
The Indiana Jones and the Water Temple.
The Water Temple.
He gets chased by a big boulder.
Mm.
So that's maybe it's sort of a sequence of almost like Cooking Mama nested mini games where every level starts with a quarter being put in. You've got to outrun and also kind of you're almost controlling a bunch of borrowers Pikmin style yeah. as they try to guide the coin down the chute. Make sure it doesn't fall over, but also don't get crushed by it, you know?
Or fall in the chute yourself. I think they call the chute the dark place, and they've lost a lot of borrowers. And you can hear the borrowers down there just jingling around in the coins down in the dark place. And then every once in a while, a big person comes and collects them. That's right. Scary. There's a scary element to that.
It does seem kind of scary. Well, that was also true in the borrowers, right? Like there's yeah. that mean old mom in Secret World of Arrietty or whatever.
Didn't see it. So I think you have a grappling hook that you can use to get up to the top of the chips, right? Chips are usually up top, right? So somebody's like, Andy Cap's Hot Fries, G8, G6. And then you throw the grappling hook up there and you zip up. And then you got to like work together with like, a bag of chips is easy, right? It's a lot of space, but not very much volume.
A lot of air in there, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty easy to... Is this a vending machine that doesn't have the weird corkscrew shit in it then? Is
that's
that what
I'm
wondering.
Like, well, there's kind of a question like of... Can they? Is it okay for them to see you? Is it okay for the customer to see you, or are you trying to stealth it?
I think you're trying to stealth it, but I also think the corkscrew shit is not in there. It's basically what we're talking about is a glass-lined, impenetrable cabinet.
Well, what's cool about this machine is that it doesn't require electricity, so you can put it anywhere because it's entirely borrower-operated.
Mm.
So there's no corkscrew, there's no coin counter. It's all handled by little. Boys and girls and everybody in there, all these little people.
And then there's like a life sim element in between rounds.
Right.
Right? The grocery store closes, the school. Do you have vending machines in your school?
Yes.
What'd you have? What was in those?
I would get a big old honey bun.
Oh, yeah, dude. I get honey buns all day. I had honey buns and I had Andy Cap's Hot Fries. And do you know what? Did you have drinks? Do you have sodas?
There was a soda machine. Yeah, we get a Dr. Pepper out of it sometimes.
They had a soda machine for 1 year, and they said, fuck that. We're going to get it out of here. We're going to replace it with a Fruitopia machine. And my fucking... Back then, I was like, boo, I want my do. I got to have my do. But now, I would be fucking psyched to slam a prohibited Fruitopia. An
you ever
ancient
have a...
Fruitopia.
You ever have Snapple Elements? Remember those?
Dude, I've had many different types of Snapple.
Oh, the Elements were so good. There was the rain one. It was made of like cactus juice or something.
My high school had some shit in it that I did not realize was that weird until we did the Mim Bam Bam TV show. And we did an episode in the high school and we shot a scene in the lounge of our high school, like the student lounge. And there's like a bunch of pool tables in there. And people are like, you have pool tables? what the fuck high school did you go to? And it's like, we had pool tables, a jukebox, and yeah, like six Fruitopia machines. And we had a, and this is the truth, a Daytona USA machine, the two player Daytona USA machine. Now the latter almost didn't work ever. They would repair at the beginning of each year. And by like 3 weeks in, like one of the screens like, was busted.
Was it in the cafeteria? Was it in the gym?
No, there's like a student lounge, like down the hall from the cafeteria. That you would like go chill in. It was a pretty cool school. And there was a bolt on the Daytona USA machine that was like probably touching an exposed wire or something like that, where if you touched it and something else metal, you would electrocute yourself. Oh. So like when you weren't playing Daytona, you would play a different game, which was...
A free game,
which was... Well, there was a cost.
Right. Physiologically.
Yeah, I didn't even realize, like, hey, it's weird that I went to a school with fucking pool tables and a Daytona USA machine in Huntington, West Virginia, right? Like, it's not even like I was in some fucking SoCal Montessori shit. Like, anyway.
What were we talking about?
I forget.
Little people in a vending machine. That's a cool idea, but I found the one that I was looking for earlier that I was...
Hemi.
It's from Constable Jones, predictably. Always hits us with the hottest,
Very reliable.
Shit. And they're saying a cover-based shooter where you are naturally invincible, but you still need the cover because you're very shy. So bullets are not really... There's a ton of enemies, and they're always blasting on you, but that's not your worry.
That's not a big deal. You're invincible.
Right. It's more about, like... there's a stage fright component. If you pop out a cover and there's like five or six enemies looking at you, you start blushing a little. Maybe you have a blush meter that when it gets full, you game over.
So it's I think you're still invincible, right? I think the game just like freezes up for a really long time.
Mm.
Like you just can't fucking play it for like an hour.
Yeah.
And that's worse than a game over.
That's way worse. That's a good punishment. How can you combat the
shyness?
Yeah, like what are you, besides hiding? I mean, I think it's going to be primarily you are moving from cover to cover, trying to get through these situations without getting very, very embarrassed.
I mean, if you are asking me what kind of power-ups you can use to combat social anxiety, I will tell you, for me, historically, drinking
a little liquid courage,
a little
serious
bit of that has been good. I don't know. I'm having a hard time figuring out how this is going to like translate to game mechanics.
Yeah, I mean, I think the core mechanic of like bouncing from cover to cover, trying not to get spotted, is like, in concept, it's cool, but it also kind of turns it into like a stealth game where you can't die, which isn't ultra compelling. There's something there. I just think maybe I don't know. It's a great little nugget of an idea. Do you have something you want to share though?
I was just thinking of stealth. I went on a whole fucking tangent in like a 5 second thing in my own mind where I was thinking about stealth games, and I was thinking about how I was playing Zelda and there was this mandatory stealth level that was fine. It was over quick enough, but I was still disappointed, like, oh man, mandatory stealth levels are my least favorite. And then I was thinking
about the Gerudo one.
Yeah, and it's fine. Like
the banana one.
Yeah, you have to drop bananas to like lure guards away, and it's funny enough, right? And you can get through it in like 30 seconds or whatever. And then I was thinking about escort missions. And there is actually one of those too, motherfucker.
Yeah,
and then I was thinking about, could there be a game? This is not based off a prompt. This is just my own dumb, just sort of spinning it. Could there be a game that is a multiplayer escort mission?
Ooh.
Where I think you start out at level bullshit and you have to team up with somebody who is level awesome, and they have to keep you alive on the escort mission for you, while like a bunch of enemies that are their level try to kill your ass, and they have to keep you alive.
So like the way it works in like Destiny, I think, is the level of the mission will match the highest level
of
the highest level player. Is that right?
There is a limit to how much more dope you can be than
in this
your
game,
enemies.
It's the opposite. There was actually a minimum difference between you and your teammate.
Right. So you're level 30. I'm level 2. And all of the enemies in this level are level 30.
If a bullet even passes by you, there will be some area of effect damage. It'll take out like half your health.
These things are going to be fucking aggro, Craig. And they're going to be coming out of the woodwork to try and like climb over cover and get me. And it's up to you to like clear a path for me to just run as fast as I can. I mean, imagine like the sort of like teamwork that this is going to require. And when it works out, I think there's going to be a very strong bond created between these two players. 90% of the time, it's not going to work out, and whatever the opposite of a bond is going to be formed. It's just nothing but just like, I don't want to disappoint you, Dad. Oh, so I didn't mean to say Dad there.
But when you end up with that perfect teammate, it's going to be a beautiful moment for you, I think. You're going to have a lifelong friend.
And not only that, there's like this fucking like, the level 30 person looks down and at the finish line, you're like, not bad, kid. Keep this up and you'd be like me someday. And the level 2 player is like, wow, you're so cool. You know what I mean? Like, it can be like a friendship of like admiration and trust.
Yeah, there's not a lot of those in online multiplayer right now.
No, you have to form a fucking communication. And then when you get through it, it's like, wow, good job. Or you're level 30 and you see the level 2 person just like stand up like, is it safe? Pop, dead. And I think that cuts, there's no second chance. It cuts off communication, gone. They're just gone, and you never team up with them again. And you're like, he doesn't have it.
It's sort of a journey situation.
He just doesn't have it.
Do you, because the thing that, escort missions have a reputation of being ultra shitty.
Yeah.
How do we get over that hump? Because I think about like the Emma Emmerich swimming thing in Metal Gear Solid 2.
Well, that was doomed to fail.
It was fucking garbage.
Swim very slow. That could have been a one-person experience and it would have sucked.
I'm saying, do you think that having a human player will make that better or make that worse?
Yeah, I mean, what stinks is fucking like Resident Evil 4, the president's daughter, like, come on, hurry. Just come on, hurry. You don't have to worry about that with a real player, unless you do. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
I think this could be fun.
I think it could be occasionally fun.
I don't think it'll be fun, but I think like the friendships that come out of it will be very meaningful.
Yeah, I think you're onto something.
How about this one though, from Sufa Zone? Huh. Sorry, Sousaphone. This one's from Sufa Zone. He says, Titanfall, but instead of your Titan, you call in your dad.
Okay, I like this. So
Pink Lloyd adds in, he comes to pick you up in a RAV4.
So that's a crucial detail because we've explored Titanfall before, but I think this is not this is not like Bidenfall where it's falling from the sky. This is like you need to call your dad and he'll be there in 15 minutes, right?
Comes,
in a truck.
Yeah. And he comes and he gets you.
Is the core gameplay, is the infantry on foot gameplay still just like Call of Duty with parkour, but you're waiting for your dad to get there? Because that's kind of sick. I kind of like that.
I think it's just like, I think you're just wall running and doing all kinds of dope shit. And then like you land on a roof and you're like behind an AC unit and there's like 6 folks on the other side of the roof with big cool guns. And you say, I'm not going to win this one. And so you press a button that initiates a cutscene that makes you invincible. That's important. I don't think anybody can come kill you once you've initiated this, but you call your dad, and then they can just watch. They can't do anything because it's a fucking RAV4. What are you going to do? Shoot it with a gun? You can't be intimidated.
You can't dent that. You can't scratch
it. You get in the RAV4, and you drive off, and you've left the game.
So it's, okay, so interesting. We're taking a component of Titanfall that I think people don't talk enough about, which is
the escape,
The escape at the end of a level where the losing team, if they make it to the airship, they can just dip and still get sort of a small victory.
This is thematically the opposite of that, where you get too scared during the game, and instead of initiating this punishment of you're dead for 4 seconds, right? And you have to like look at a map for 4 seconds and then you're back and playing. The punishment is you leave the game and you're just done with that game and you don't get any more points from that game. And you have to get in your... And guess what? Your dad's a fucking nerd. And you're like, your friends are all going to watch you get picked up by him. And I think it scans your dad.
It does use your actual dad. Because you know what this reminds me of? There's like a Yu-Gi-Oh card. I'm not going to be able to find the name, but there's a Yu-Gi-Oh card where it's like... You both lose. Like it's a Yu-Gi-Oh card where it's like if you have to be losing by at least like 1,000 health to use this, but basically it's like the game's over, you both lose. It's basically the fuck both of us card. This is like
I don't think it's like that. I think it doesn't end the game entirely.
You leave the game.
It's like a 16-on-16 game. And I've been doing okay, right? And I've had a pretty good game, but I land in a room and there's 8 folks in here. I press call my dad call, and The RAV4 comes, and I'm invincible. They're shooting at me, and they're shooting at my dad in the RAV4, but it doesn't do anything because it's a fucking cutscene. And I hop in, and I drive off and leave. And they get this satisfaction of knowing we've scared this person so bad, they got in their fucking nerdy dad's RAV4 and driven off. And you get to, like, I think they can also yell things at you, and you still hear it.
Like, get lost, nerd.
Get out of here, you fucking nerd, right? Like, they can, like, that's the victory they get. You get the victory of just, like, your dad came and got you because it got a little scary.
Do you think, I think it would be kind of cool if we had a leaderboard in the game of the people who scared the most, like, the players who scared the most other players to running off with their dads.
I think that could be good. I also think there's a fucking pro-level MLG strat where the dad and you are invincible during this cutscene, but if you can put yourself between the enemy and the highway off-ramp, or wait, put the enemy between you and the highway off-ramp and then call your dad, he will...
Oh my god, triple kill.
He will fucking destroy them with the RAV4, and then you will still get in the car. Neither of you will even address the fact that your dad just killed three people.
Right.
You will get in the car, and you won't get points for the kills or anything, and you'll drive off. But they'll know. I guess I'm just, like, all about disrupting this sort of, like, usual cycle of shooters.
Sounds like you're ready to disrupt kind of the online multiplayer competitive shooter that we know and love.
You got any good suggestions?
Here's one from Pet Kitties, who we've definitely used before, who says, Nintendogods.
All right, so
you know Nintendogs.
I've touched those dogs. Yes.
Well, this is Nintendogods.
Are we talking about like Zeus and Athena? And
there's so many ways to take this. There's
a lot of pretty bad ways to take this that I would love to avoid.
So it's one possibility is you're raising existing mythological gods, which I'm not crazy about because I think what is more fun to me is we finally revive the god game genre and make it a sort of, it's like Black and White, but
fuck,
it's just a bunch of Mushroom Kingdom shit going on down there, and you're using your touchscreen to kind of grab Mario by the nape of his neck and maybe toss him into a mountain.
But that's not really what Nintendogs was about.
Well, fuck that. It's up
Nintendogs,
to us.
Nintendogs was not a game where you were a dog just fucking shit up.
Pikmin 3 was different from Pikmin 2. It's just fucking who cares? We can do whatever we want.
Who cares? Man, Black and White, dude, you just took me on a trip through my mind's eye.
Talk to me through your favorite Black and White memories, and I'll adapt them for Nintendogods.
I mean, I think I was too young to understand like how to be good at Black and White, so I hit like level 2 and could not progress any further. But that's okay, because I also figured out how to do the chase camera when you fucking picked up a villager and threw them across the entire fucking planet so hard they saw the curvature of the earth. Mm-hmm. And so that's all I did for hours. And after I did it 1,000 times, I said I beat the game and I deleted it from my computer.
I think that's a pretty... A lot of people have that experience with Black and White where, like, I couldn't fucking tell you what the critical path was in that joint, but I do remember throwing a lot of dudes around, watching them bounce off the side of a mountain, and I would love to do that just to the entire suite of Nintendo mascots. Here's one that I'm really fond of because we can kind of do whatever we want with it. Bart Fargo says, Spaghetti Pong.
I mean, this is that bonus game that came with Sports Friends.
Which, the like secret hidden one where it's Pong, but your paddles are like kind of wobbly and you slap them around.
It's called something like Gomp or something .
That game was all right. I think
that game was fucking fun. I played the bonus games that and Get On Top more than I played some of the main games that came with Sports Friends.
Yeah, Get On Top rules.
Get On Top's fucking hysterical.
I think what I'm picturing though for Bart Fargo's Spaghetti Pong, I've actually rolled his name into the game. It is Bart Fargo's Spaghetti Pong.
Yes, absolutely.
When the ball launches, for it to have to kind of be almost like a snake mechanic, where rather than a ball bouncing between two paddles, it's a length of spaghetti that gets longer and longer as it bounces between the two paddles. And I guess let's talk about how that might work mechanically. I think it leaves the spaghetti trail behind it. And there's like some loose watery physics to it. So when it passes over it again, it kind of wobbles. But also like it gets harder and harder to see the incoming end of the spaghetti.
Yeah, the business end of this spog.
Exactly. So the longer the spog gets,
So is it? So it's always it's a sort of linear direction this spog is moving in, right? Because it's never, or can it flip end over end, and then all of a sudden there's multiple business ends of this one spog strand?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think it's got to. I want it to be physically simulated. And I love.
Then, if that's the case, then I think once you've played for too long, then it just sticks to one of the paddles.
It does get nice and exactly how you like it. It's a little too sticky. I think what I'm fond of is like I've never played a there. I've played Pong games where it speeds up the longer you go, or games where it gets harder the longer the volley goes. But I've never played a game where it gets harder to read, where legibility, except for maybe like Space Giraffe.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's kind of a neat idea. I don't know. Could we get other elements of spaghetti, other sauces and meatballs and stuff in the mix, do you think?
Not without people thinking we're being fucking derivative of our flagship product.
Fucking, how come every other game developer on Earth gets to just make fucking Shadow of Mordor over and over, and we do one spaghetti game 40 weeks apart? And
sorry, man.
It's hard out
here. I don't make the fucking rules. I have one here from Manglewort who says, WrestleMania, the text adventure.
Okay.
Don't see a lot of good text adventures these days, except you do. There's actually some really good ones out there, like Lifeline and a Dark Room, and they're all on mobile. Sorcery is another good one. But this would be Wrestle Boys are in it, and you control their actions and their promos and their slams and their jams and their punches and kicks.
So what kind of are those? Because that kind of leads into my first question, which is what are the kind of textual verbs that you can enact on the environment?
So I think it would be like you are standing in the ring at WrestleMania 31, and I think that's where we're at. And to the north is The Miz. To the south is an exit. To the east is Shane McMahon. And to the west is a torch. What do you do? And then I think you type in the direction, and then you engage whoever, right? But if you engage Shane McMahon and you didn't go to The Miz, maybe The Miz runs up and just punches you and you lost. You should have done the other one. Or actually, the secret is you're supposed to get the torch because The Miz is weak against fire attacks, I guess.
So it's got the old, it's a very throwback, like classic text adventure where you can just make a wrong choice and be arbitrarily killed.
Destroyed,
or game overed at any time.
Yeah. But then it can be like once you are getting into that good fight, it can be like use lift on Shane and then use toss to Spanish announcers table.
It seems like there's a lot of opportunity for fun Easter eggs where you'll bake in fun combinations and references to classic wrestles that happened in years past. I don't know a good goddamn thing about wrestling, but it's gonna be on you to kind of carry this.
I think I can get us across the finish line there. Did you ever use QBasic as a kid?
I don't think so. QBasic.
QBasic was a programming language that came on a lot of old computers that you could like activate the EXE, and then there was like fun games in there. So there was one where like you could type in a vertical and horizontal velocity, and then a monkey would throw an exploding banana towards another monkey, and you had to try to hit him. Okay. There's also a snake clone on there. I learned how to program in QBasic a little bit, and I made my own fucking choose-your-own-adventure game that I spent probably 200 hours making based on Final Fantasy Mystic Quest. Like, who gave a shit about that enough to spend... Me, apparently. I was touched by Final Fantasy, the bad role-playing game Final Fantasy Mystic Quest, that I pissed my life away. So I'm saying, I think if I could find QBasic, I could make this pretty... This is one of those few games that I think I could actually fucking make for us.
Yeah, you could pick up where you left off a bit. I don't think I ever got... Like, I've always fantasized... Like, I would, like, read books about coding, but I never really did it as a boy. Instead, I was really making kind of choose-your-own-adventures in PowerPoint and in Hyper Studio. That was my jam.
Yeah. Man, maybe we just make a new QBasic for kids.
A new piece of coding software?
Yeah, that's like kind of shitty, but it's just like if 10 go to 20, like so fucking easy, like calculator programming bullshit.
Right. Man, well, so this is interesting because my instincts as a developer would be to make something maybe more adjacent to Click and Play, where it's just like an awful prototype old-timey game maker.
Oh my God.
Where you can just make the shittiest
Yeah, that'd be really good.
There's like, tell me if this resonates with you. I feel like there was a pretty big chunk of my life where I didn't know there was such a thing as like bad things. Like the concept of bad video games didn't enter my mind until like I was probably 11 or 12. They were just video games and they were all good.
Yeah, bud.
So I was like definitely downloading like the shittiest Sonic the Hedgehog fan games, all made in click and play, and just kind of playing them indiscriminately because I don't think I had a Sega Genesis yet. And it was I'm sure on some level I knew that this was not Commander Keen levels of quality, but Sonic that I got on GeoCities. Like, what the fuck?
I would get birthday money and I would go to KB Toys with my birthday money. And I would go to the SNES section, and I'd be like, oh, I'll spend all my money on The Adventures of Dr. Franken. And then take that home and be like, wow, this game sucks. But I didn't have that thought. Looking back now, of course it wasn't a good game. Kimco's The Adventures of Dr. Franken. But I didn't have that thought in my mind of like, I should spend this on a good one.
Right. We weren't looking for purchasing advice. We were just like, hey, a new video game. It's good because it's not the one I have already. It's different. Different things. Different graphics in the game.
I'm going to spend all of the money I'll have this year on Paladin's Quest. And it's going to be fucking miserable. It's going to be really bad. And I'm not going to understand how it works. How about a new one?
Sure. Here's one from Wolf Buns, who says, these worlds are getting too open, boys. Make the world's first closed world game.
Shit. This is like The Room, isn't it? Like, this is like Escape the Room shit.
I love The Room, but I think when I read the submission earlier, I was trying to like think of what the opposite of an open world game is, and I think about like in the opening first few hours of those late 2000s open world, like a Saints Row 1 or something. Or like, you remember how open world games would, like, there'd be like a bridge to get to the other side of town, but it's like locked down.
And if you drive across it, you fucking get 5 stars immediately.
Right, exactly.
And the police come fuck your shit up.
My vision for this is a game where it starts out completely open on some Breath of the Wild shit, and as you progress through the story, the world begins kind of closing in on you, and you lose access to entire swaths of the game, until by the time it ends, you're just on one sort of tiny half mile square that you really got to just make the most out of.
I like that a lot, actually.
How do we make that
we're describing my dream game. I'm so fucking over open world games, except for Breath of the Wild, which is maybe my favorite open world game ever made, and so I'm willing to carve out an exception. But like, when faced with like a new fucking galaxy of green spears that I can collect until I find the blue ones, and then I can find the purple ones and get the legendary quality and spend some time crafting that on the other side of the world. Like, I'm just like, hey, it sounds like a lot of travel, and I'm kind of a homebody these days.
Right. There's nothing more exciting to me than when someone, like, a video game is getting talked about and people are like, by the way, it's 2 hours long. I'm like, dog.
Yama yama.
Give me that. Give me Grow Home.
How about this one?
What you got?
And it's from the opposite of decent, who says, a game where every boss is a popular musician with attacks based on their biggest hit song.
All right.
I also think this would. There's also a version of this where it's a one hit wonder and based on like their only hit song.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's no genre really laid out for us here, other than that there are boss battles and the rest is our oyster, kind of.
The rest is our oyster to determine.
It's okay. I don't like, you know, I don't like giving you ultimatums.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really important to me that we have Gangnam Style in here. That we have Psy.
So there would be horses, like a horse summoning, right? It would be an equine summon attack that he does, I guess.
And he's able to summon it by kind of crossing his wrists and I'm doing it right now.
I assume you're always doing it, yeah.
I'm not always doing it. There have been entire episodes of this show where I went the whole time without doing the Gangnam Style dance once. Yeah. This is not one of them, though.
I mean, you could do like... I'm looking at a list of one-hit wonders right now. And there's some fucking weird things on here.
Such as what?
Well, like the Mighty Body Boss Tones had at least two wonders. Wonder.
They had that song on the Digimon the Movie soundtrack, right?
Oh, fucking... I don't know. Why would I know?
Why would you know?
Marcy Playground Sex and Candy. I think there's probably like an attack based on in there somewhere. Semisonic closing time. They make you close your eyes and then you have dark. You have the darkness debility. And that's I'm imagining this is sort of just an RPG.
Griffin, because I'm realizing now you don't. And by the way, a lot of these attacks sound like sort of like vaguely JoJo Bizarre Adventure adjacent.
God, I gotta watch that show sometime, huh?
Nah, not really.
I see it. It's haunting me on Crunchyroll sometimes.
It's sitting there,
and I'm like, it's sitting there. No, like,
you're too busy watching.
Today's the day.
Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid.
Which one's? Who's that?
I'm gonna just to give you a sense of what it's like because you deserve to know.
Okay.
What was on the Digimon the movie soundtrack? It is like the most. It is the most quintessentially year 2000 soundtrack of all time. It's
hit me.
I want you to know this was my only exposure to any of these artists. Okay,
I'm so fucking excited. So, that you just added that this is your only exposure to these artists makes me the most excited to hear what you have to say, Nick.
So opens with a digi rap, of course. Song number two, All Star, by the band Smash Mouth, performed
by... dog shit. That's not true
because that's the one exception on this list, except maybe. There might be two exceptions, but Smash Mouth was the one because the first CD I ever bought was Smash Mouth's Astro Lounge at a Target in Charlotte, North Carolina. So All Star by Smash Mouth. God, this album's so good. Rockefeller Skank by Fatboy Slim.
Ooh!
A cover of Kids in America by a band called L.E.N. or Len. Hey Digimon, which is kind of Digimon rap adjacent. That's also by Paul Gordon, the Digimon rap composer. The song, I don't know if you know this, the song 1 Week by the band the Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh,
have you heard of them?
Manzies, yeah.
The Impression That I Get by the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones.
Hey, there they are.
That's a slapper. All My Best Friends Are Metalheads by Less Than Jake.
Oh my god. This was a Digimon movie?
All of these songs show up in the film itself.
So they'd be like the fucking orange dinosaur is fighting the red one.
Garumon, is that right?
I know fuck all about. I was very brand loyal to my Poke buddies. But like they would be fighting like a big red swordfish or whatever the fuck. And I'd be like, bah, 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 bah,
yeah,
bah,
dude, bah, yes.
Bah, 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 bah.
That's precisely what it was like. God, that movie's fucking great.
That song's fucking great. I never had to knock on wood. That's that, right?
It was like, I was literally yesterday, I was wandering around my kitchen, kind of like singing that song. And I was like, why is this? And I'm like, oh, right. The Digimon, the movie soundtrack is what injected this into my head. Like the only exposure to the Mighty Mighty Boss Tunes that I ever had and ever will have. It looks like Metacritic gave the movie a quote generally unfavorable score of 20 out of 100, which is not that big of a number, but I don't know.
You know, if I made a movie and I asked 100 people to see it and 20 of them walked away saying I liked that, I think I'd be all right with that.
You made 20 people's day, you know?
Just made Lawrence Van
Gilder of the New York Times did describe the film as, quote, noisy and ill-conceived as it focused too much on, quote, morphing monsters and too little on, quote, storytelling talent and animation.
Let's see how Pokemon the Movie 2000 did.
Well, that's the problem here, is that critics consider the film an improvement over Pokemon the first movie. However, in itself was predictable, suffered from mediocre animation, and this article's...
See, Pokemon the Movie 2000 has 15% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's fucking ridiculous. Who are they trying to fool? Movie 2000 is the one that... Is that the one that had, like, the fun Pikachu Island
Lugio,
short?
Lugio in it. Oh. And fucking Pokemon the first movie, Mewtwo versus Mew, 14%.
The fuck?
Fuck off with that, because that one made me cry. That one makes me cry every time.
Yeah, who's out there watching that movie in full? First of all, there's some good, like, legitimately good puns in those movies. I don't really fuck with anyone who was like a critic in like the years like 1998 to 2002 and was like walking into the theater to see Pokemon the movie, expect like they're gonna shit all over it.
But
like,
holy shit, the rest of this episode is me reading actual famous reviewers' thoughts of Pokemon the movie.
What did Siskel and Ebert say?
Well, let's start with Wally Hammond from Time Out. Popular film criticism. The story is a humorless retread of a Bond-style world domination yarn with a Frankenstein theme. I'm sorry, are you talking about Mewtwo and Team Rocket and stuff?
Oh my god.
How about this one from Robert Kohler at Variety? This pacifist spirit of brotherhood echoes the heroics in Princess Mononoke and other anime titles, but the artistic gap between the Miyazaki masterpiece and this project is huge. I'm sorry, you mean the Pokemon licensed Pokemon movie?
Are you talking about the Pokemon movie that has the year it came out in it? Or are you talking about the Pokemon movie that's called Pokemon the first movie because it's the first Pokemon movie? Like, how's your expectation management?
Huh.
By the way, I'm getting a little actually defensive about this because I'm reading now that Digimon the Movie won the award for worst achievement in animation at the 2000 Stinkers Bad Movie Awards.
That's mean.
I don't think there should be a Stinkers Bad Movie Awards.
I don't think there should be one of those. How about this one from Jeffrey M. Anderson at Combustible Celluloid? If you're over 10 years old, I have four words for you. See Princess Mononoke instead. Like, yes. What the fuck?
Yeah, who are you dissuading? Who's like... I don't know.
Why? Don't go see Pokemon the first movie. Go see No Country for Old Men. Go see Fargo instead.
Yeah, go see real movie, stupid 11-year-olds.
Empire Magazine, it would be nice to think that the kids would take on board the heavy-handed moral messages, but more likely, they'll be looking out for new Pokemon to collect, therefore fulfilling Nintendo's merchandising dream. Yeah, all right.
It's the easiest target on Earth. I'm not into it.
Do you remember when Kevin Smith made Jersey Girl and he was like, this movie's not for the critics. This movie's not for critics. This is just this one's number for the fans. And it's Ben Affleck and he just learned to come to grips with being a single dad. And he said that, and I thought, that's garbage. I actually feel that way about Pokemon the first movie, Mewtwo versus Mew. I think you should just skip it. I don't think you should review this one.
I just don't think you should get to review it.
With its undertones of slavery and cockfighting, Pokemon may have the most unsavory premise ever for children's entertainment.
Holy shit.
That's from the Northwest Herald in Crystal Lake, Illinois.
Going for the jugular Northwest Herald.
This film is baffling, amateur, and somewhat contradictory about violence. That's Hollywood.com said that one.
Well, you got us there. There's some weird violence.
I want a big one, a big site. BBC, the BBC, Disney's wild, creative, but beautifully controlled set pieces, eccentric, memorable characters, and sheer rush of color tower over anything on offer here. Okay, I thought for a second there they may have been very confused. Like,
you want to know who fucking kicked ass?
Who
fucking hit it out of the park on their review of Pokemon the first movie? Here's the opening paragraph of Roger Ebert's review.
Fuck yeah, all right. How am I not surprised that EB got it in
check
one?
This out. There are times here on the movie beat when I feel like I'm in plane over my head. This is one of those times. My assignment is to review Pokemon the first movie. I have done research. I have even played a Pokemon card game with a 6-year-old Pokemon trainer named Emil. The rules of the game seem to bear a suspicious resemblance to war. Don't really follow you there.
No, actually, it seems suspiciously like Magic the Gathering, but fine. Yeah. Mystery.
At the end of the game, Emil had all 52 cards. I do not know if this is because of his mastery as a trainer or because he stacked the deck. I did not know we were playing a real Pokemon game. Emil was pulling
you
a fast
weren't.
One. Dude, that's not how the Pokemon trading card game works. Homie, you got scammed by Emil. A 6-year-old scammed Roger Ebert out of $20 worth of Pokemon cards.
I know. Yes. It's pronounced Emil, which I only know because it's my dad's middle name. But also, fucking, this kid is the dopest ever. Like, yeah, so the way it works is you put your card down there. Oops, I put my Charizard on top of it, so I get to keep your Wartortle.
All of these cards. Open your wallet.
Open your wallet. Actually, you give me $30.
Kind
That's
of a $30
of the
money
game.
Match minimum.
It's just like...
But shout out to Roger Ebert for being like, yo, dog, let me be 100% level with you.
Work.
I don't know what the fuck this shit is. This is just my job. Of course, I mean, he does do the kind of mean-spirited Miyazaki comparison.
I mean, I guess, did that fucking come out that year? That must be it, because I don't know why the fuck
actually,
else it's...
He talks about Totoro specifically.
Even that's better, because Totoro is the children's movie, while Mononoke is fucking super not.
An adult movie. He closes out by saying, I can't recommend the film or work up much enthusiasm for it because there's no level at which it enriches a young viewer by encouraging thinking or observation. It's just a sound and light show linked to the marketing push for Pokemon in general, but... I may have completely bypassed the point and misinterpreted crucial Pokemon lore. This may disqualify me from ever becoming a Pokemon trainer. I can live with that. You know what? Fucking good on you, though.
Good on you. That's that good, man.
That's that classic.
I mean, that's that good stuff.
They don't make
man.
Them like they used to.
Not the fucking, I don't know, Cider House Rules was a much superior film. This movie could have used some of Kevin Spacey's gravitas that he brought to American Beauty. Like, fucking...
By the way, this review was published in 1999. There are comments from like 2014 where dudes are like, what a deplorable review. He claims he did his research, but he completely missed the point of Pokemon.
I mean, he did get the rules wrong, but that's not his fault. Emil took him to the fucking the
Griffin.
The shop.
All the awesome lore is completely lost on him. He sees Donphan and thinks, okay, a Pokemon, but it was so much more than what that when the movie premiered. He'll never understand the mystery of the elusive Mew and why having Mew in the movie was so freaking awesome. Why is Donphan like the thing he?
Why is Donphan your go-to? Yeah. Is this our fucking?
our game.
This is our nug. This is like okay. The game is like Papers, Please, and you are a movie critic who has been assigned, and it's 2000, and you've been assigned to review, fucking Pokemon the first movie, mm-hmm. and then Digimon the next year, and then. There's always going to be something, right? Leading up to like Yo-Kai Watch,
and
whatever the
perhaps
fuck.
Perhaps that something is procedurally generated as you go through the game.
Yes, there's an immensely popular children's toy and game franchise.
Yeah, phenomenal.
That has a new movie, and you are tasked with reviewing it in a way that is digestible for your readers, but also like gets it. And this game would be fucking impossible.
Yeah, you just lose.
Yeah, you just... No, I think there's a win condition, but I think it involves, like... I think you actually write the review, and then how do we score the review?
Like, how does the game score what the reviewer does?
I
mean, my criteria would be modesty and, like, willingness to admit that you're...
You have to humble yourself before Pokemon the first movie, is mm-hmm. what I'm saying. You
I
have
agree.
To come... You have to... The penitent man shall pass, you know? It's just, this is so, this, I could, no joke, there's 30 more of these fucking reviews, Nick, and
it's
I could read
so, I could, we
every
could do a whole separate podcast about this.
One, fucking Rhonda Bogman from Pop Matter says, I shudder at the thought of several sequels to this flick. Shudder!
Oh, it's the
shudder.
Worst idea. Oh, no, children's movies.
Rhonda's lamentations at the thought of them making 60 of these fucking movies, which they absolutely have and did.
I will admit that I am like... I'm looking at the cast for Pokemon the first movie on this Ebert review, and I'm slightly shook by the revelation that the same dude did the voices of Brock, James, and Squirtle.
Oh,
that's
dude,
fucking,
yeah.
That is news to me. Is there going to be, because Papers, Please, what was cool about that game to me was like, there are these sort of procedure, like these moments in the game where it would kind of stop down and something surprising or unexpected would happen.
Yeah.
Is there a moment in our Pokemon the first movie procedurally generated review simulator where a 6-year-old kid named Emil tries to hustle you out of $30? Because that is so pivotal to the experience. The fact that Roger Ebert admitted that is
how about this? The
awesome.
Austin Chronicle fucking reviewed this. Marjorie Baumgarten said there's a new definition of the term critic-proof movie, and it goes by the name Pokemon the first movie.
Hell yeah!
These are the only folks that got it. Just like yeah,
Marjorie
we're not going to do
Roger.
This is not going to be good. Fuck. I don't know if this is a good game idea or not. I'm just like, I know we've spent a long time talking about it. I'm just like, this is my new obsession.
Yeah. I could do a whole, just I want to release a book of the best, funniest Pokemon reviews. Just seeing Roger Ebert like even talk about Mewtwo or Charizard is like such a wonderful salve for my soul. The story is idiotic. The individual Pokemon have personalities that make the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles look like Billy Crystal. That's a crazy simile. What are you talking about?
But that, okay, this, okay, no, this is the nug, because that sentence that was just written was chosen from the user interface of this video game,
right.
Where it's just like the, and then like you get a list of prompts of like culturally relevant things in the year 1999. It's like mm-hmm. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles looks like, and then you get a list of culturally relevant actors in 1999. It's like
Billy Crystal somehow.
And then that's how we score it, right? Like that uses heuristics that are easy to check up on. You're not actually like typing in shit. You are choosing like it's like Mad Libs, right?
Yeah, that's it.
That's how we do it. It's like Mad Libs for movie reviews.
Maybe
you're just a 90s movie reviewer, and that is the game. And then Pokemon the first movie is that
kind of the final boss.
It is that Papers, Please like. Winless condition where
yes.
just like you it is you're hit with an ethical choice, and I think the right choice there is to just like miss your deadline,
right,
and not just submit this review,
delete the game, close the game. Can I okay so
because otherwise fucking 18 years in the future, two guys are gonna fucking drag you on their Cool Games Inc. podcast for your shit ass review that you wrote.
Here's something fun we can do on this podcast is imagine that in the game, I was punching in something one word at a time, and I wrote this phrase. How would you rate it? A scientist has found a way to genetically clone one of the Pokemons, parentheses Pokemon, named Mew. Mewtwo then clones other Pokemons on his own. Sort of a revolt of the Pokey. Each Pokemon has a different kind of power. The hero, Ash Ketchum, not correct, so called because he wants to catch them all and have a complete set of Pokemons.
He wants to catch them all.
Gotta catch them all. And he wants to have a complete set of Pokemons and ventures with his friends to the Villains Island where battles take place between different kinds of Pokemons, then parentheses, Pokemon, question mark, and their clones. So Roger really is spending a lot of the text here wrestling with the idea of how you make Pokemon plural and still never really lands on the correct answer.
I mean, there's so many, there's just a lot of these little fish. He's flopping around, gasping for air, trying to find the angle, trying to find the through line for their review. And this person found the through line, and it was, I don't know what the plural is, and that's the whole thing.
And that person is Roger Ebert.
George Mayer for the Orlando Weekly says, this is a movie that knows its audience. See, that's gotta humble yourself. Humble yourself before Mewtwo.
Humble yourself before Mewtwo has got to be like your webcam turns on and you kind of need to bow before him, and that's the only way, that's the only true win condition for the game. And if you want to see more people humbling themselves before Mewtwo, you should go to youtube.com/polygon and check out our series Touch the Skyrim.
What's the name of this 90s movie critic game?
Damn.
Where it's just like Mad Libs, where you just fill in the blanks and then you get scored based on, like, if you chose the right prompts to satisfy your editor and the audience at large.
Can we make it phonetically resemble, like, a Papers, Please or Cart Life situation? Like,
yeah, so just two words. Deadline's too, not anything. It's got to let, you have to, I mean, the critic, the game? No, because it's, no, like, can't be.
That's a different thing. Instead of Papers, Please, it's Ebert and email. Because to me, that's the core relationship here.
Yeah.
The 6-year-old who conned the 50-year-old.
If you know, if you fucking know, I need to know this boy who fucking ripped off Roger Ebert 18 years ago.
Yeah, holy shit. That's actually a really great question, is that he's like 20, he's like fucking basically my age now, if I'm doing my math right.
And he pulled off this legendary con.
This heist.
This heist, essentially. I mean, not that, and Sliding Doors, dude, like, which also probably came out in 1999. Fucking, what if he hadn't done this and Ebert had kept those cards and became a huge fucking, like, Ernie Hudson Poke fan?
That would be sick. Getting away in a competitive play.
Sliding Doors. We need a game. We need a name. Name. Critical.
Is there a Pokemon?
I don't know that it has to be on the Pokemon, in the Pokemon maybe franchise.
Maybe instead of Critical Darling, it's like Critical Darkrai. That's a Pokemon.
Popular opinion bias.
I think between the two of us, Griffin, there's going to be a good Pokemon pun we can come up with.
But okay, yes. I just don't know that Pokemon needs to be in the title of it.
I mean, we could do our.
Yeah, that's it. So, but you're just going to say a Pokemon word, aren't you?
I would never do that, no. I don't think it would be good for the name. I think it would give away the surprise. I think you do like a critical word and I do a video game word. All right, ready?
Yep.
All right. One, two, three.
Analysis. Munchlax. Oh, you fucker.
What? Munchlax Analysis is a pretty good name for a video game.
Munchlax wasn't even in Pokemon the first movie.
He doesn't have to be in Pokemon the first movie. This is a time hopping. As you advance in your career, we go later and later.
All right, Munchlax Analysis is a very good name, actually. All right, Munchlax Analysis. It is a Mad Lib style review simulator.
It's a game about the struggles of being an aging critic, really.
Of being a critic of movies that were just not made for you at all. God, this is so fucking. I'm bookmarking the Rotten Tomatoes page for Pokemon the first
movie. It's a real
gold. And you know what's so exciting to me, Nick, is I know that the other Pokemon movies have similar amazing reviews like this. Just like, it's no Ponyo. I know it's not Ponyo.
That's a good point. Like, we could probably come up with an algorithm that could just figure out the exact percentage of Pokemon movie reviews that, like, name drop a Miyazaki movie, because it's got to be, like, 80%.
Sorry, I'm just dipping in real quick, and we won't do as deep a dive. Oh, my God. Fucking Miami Herald, you've disappointed me after your good review of the first movie. Japanese, this Charles Savage, appropriate last name. Japanese anime can rise to a legitimate art form, as with the intricate and haunting post-apocalyptic classic Akira, but the disposable Pokemon 2000 is far lazier stuff. You fucking jerk ass!
Off. Fucking name-dropping Akira. What a piece of work.
It can rise to a respectable, like, Akira. It's
Pokemon the fourth movie was good. I just wish it was more like Akira. It's my only real problem with it.
Oh, my God.
Well, I think that's it. Thank you for listening to
BBC.com. A few set pieces, though, do stand out. Weird. Almost entirely spherical fish swimming in the water. Magikarp, you mean? Okay. A boat crashing down hundreds of steps. You're just describing, okay, and a jagged, quote, chicken lit up by golden electric energy are certainly transfixing. I'm sorry.
Zapdos? Golden chicken. I love that. Gotta love that golden chicken.
You're talking about that golden jagged chicken? Zapdos? My boy Zapdos?
I think there's no better way to wrap this up, though, than to look at the only zero-star review of Pokemon the first movie, written by the Michael Atkinson of The Village Voice. It's actually been taken down now, but I think with a little bit of internet detective work, and here we go, got the Google cache open. He opens it with, "Stand aside, for I am the master of Perplexichu, the 152nd Pokemon species of the head-slapping variety, with the special power of Gape."
Gape?
I don't know why he said Gape.
All right.
He's kind of predicting where the Pokemon franchise fan art might end up going down the line. "My Pokemon can even transform into Urkadon, a highly evolved Pokemon of the cranky critic variety."
Oh my God, Nick! It's no Akira!
"It makes the Star Wars mythos play like Pong."
Oh my God, what does that mean?
Okay. "In fact, entire hunks of the feature about a cloned psychic feline endeavoring to take over the world by cloning more Pokemon made me wish I was Dopechu, air Pokemon of the peyote variety, amid the low-grade Akira Brimstone, noxious cuteness, and stone knives animation. The Pokemon universe reveals itself here to the newcomer as possibly the most deranged, pointlessly complex, automatic writing-like cultural manifestation outside of the cosmologies of the more creative psychotics." Dude, you can't write.
Dude, you gotta stop it.
It sucks to read.
It sucks to hear you read. This is somebody who fucking charged right into the final boss of Snorlax, Munchlax analysis.
Yeah.
With just like, "I'm ready to take on this one's challenges." And they got through it. And it's like, you weren't ready, prepared.
You did a 0% speed run. You figured out how to lose the game as quickly as possible. And it's by opening with like a sarcastic thing talking about your special power of Gape. You blew
it. Fuck, wowzers, Nick.
All right. I could literally do this all day. But.
I know. There's so Scary Movie is a better family film, says John Popick.
What
reviewer.
The fuck? No, it's not.
It's not, I promise.
That's just not correct.
Susan Stark, Detroit News, a tolerable experience. Yeah, okay.
You know what? That's closer.
You got to walk the middle path. Humble thyself.
I love that.
Before Mewtwo.
Humble thyself before Mewtwo.
The penitent critic shall pass.
It's just the way the world works.
That's it. Nick, we got to wrap up, dude, or else I'll go the whole day with this, and I can't because I have a flight to catch.
Yeah.
This has been Cool Games, Inc. This has been Munchlax Analysis. Fucking, I can't. It's hard for me to process thoughts anymore.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I just want to,
I'm closing the tab.
Read. I want to binge. I'm going to spend my entire birthday binging fucking.
Yes. Oh, happy birthday, Nick.
Thank you. I'm plan on spending it. I was going to have a small little get together, but I've decided instead that I'm canceling that. And I'm just going to get a third and a fourth and a fifth monitor. And I'm going to put Pokemon reviews from 1999 on every single one and just really soak it in.
Thank you for listening. Please tell a friend. Please leave a review on iTunes. Please keep listening. And that's it.
That's it.
Thanks. Until next time, I'm Griffin McElroy.
I'm Nick Robinson.
No problem. Fun.